April 23rd, the House Transportation Committee, in attendance, Representative Jaroff, Representative Metcalf, Representative Hurlburt, and Representative Cato. This morning we have...
Madam Chairman, I think for the record, we ought to make note that since we are taking on committee business there, and we're talking about things that prelude the meeting there, if one of our members is taking the attitude, unless we're not discussing bills, we ought to make note of that for the record. And I kind of resent the fact of having to come to the meetings there and then having to go through the same thing again later on, and this is basically prelude to legislation that we'll have before us. I think that if a person is going to assume the responsibility of elected office and serve on a committee, that they ought to be here during this time. And it bothers me to have one of our committee members here, three, that has taken this position. I am not assuming that the other two have.
Right. One of our members has stated that unless we're actually handling legislation, that he doesn't have time to come to the meeting. I go along with Representative Jaroff and feel that this should be a matter of record. At the present time, Representative Hayes is out of town. Representative Buchholz is in Finance Committee meeting, and Representative Fanning is not here. Today we have a proposal, a prelude to a proposal, and a proposal from the Boeing jet foil, Boeing company on the jet foil, something that has been discussed quite thoroughly and, as Representative Jaroff said, is a prelude to possible legislation. The demonstration will be on how the jet foil can fit in with our marine transportation system and very possibly solve some of the problems that we find prevalent with the marine transportation committee. I'd like to introduce to you Paul Baumgartner of the Boeing Company and Bob Edwards of the Boeing Company. Would you like to make the presentation?
Thank you. We're from the Boeing Marine System, part of the Boeing Company. This is a separate division of the Boeing Company. And we, at the present time, are manufacturing a unique product called the jet foil. The jet foil is the passenger boat and operates at high speeds. And because of its unique design, can travel at high speeds comfortably, even in rough water. And they're operating in many places in the world. We'll give you a little bit of this information today. And what we feel is that the jet foil does bring something that is unique to this part of the world, and that is that we have a proposal that would permit you to evaluate the jet foil in service between your city centers, and this would be an augmentation to your airline and ferry service that you have today. It would not be replacing anything else that you have. The jet foil, because of its design and because of its size, can operate right from the downtown piers of each of the cities and provide a fast and convenient service for the travelers. And I think that there have been many questions about the feasibility of this service, and we've discussed this with several people up here over the last 3 or 4 years. So what we have today, we'll discuss more detail with you, is a proposal from the Boeing Company that would permit the state of Alaska to try this service for a demonstration period and satisfy themselves that at a minimum financial risk to the state, this could be augmentation in the present highway system. Now, there are 3 points I'd really like to leave with you today. One is that the jet foil is a truly unique kind of a boat. There's nothing else like it. The merge foil, hydrofoil boat, and we'll show you a movie in a minute how it works. The second thing is that it does, we feel, augment your transportation system. And we feel that eventually, if you had a few jet foils, that you could perhaps make more efficient scheduling of the airline and the ferry system. And third, we want to emphasize that we're doing something we feel is unique in our business practice, that we have a proposal for a demonstration period so that you can surprises them to their satisfaction before going ahead with the full commitment. Now, if I can just tell you a little bit about the Boyne Marine System, and then Paul will talk about more of the details. Today, the Boeing Company, as you probably realize, is involved in many, many new programs. In addition to commercial airplanes, we're involved in considerable aerospace and energy programs. And Boeing Marine Systems is, as we say, one part of this company activity. Now, the Jetfoil has been operating commercial service throughout the world since 1975. We feel it's quite a proven system that there have been over 10 million passengers who have had the experience of traveling on the Jetfoil, and the boat is now a mature piece of hardware. We don't deny that there were some early problems that you have in a brand new development, but those have been behind us now. The boat was completely redesigned about 4 years ago, and we have now what has become a very reliable piece of hardware. Presently, there are, we say, seven boats, actually there's just about two more. There'll soon be nine Jetfoils operating between Hong Kong and Macau. That service has, of course, been quite successful and been operating since 1975. The additional service that we've had going since 1977, traveling from the city of Niigata in Japan across a very rough stretch of the Sea of Japan to the island of Sado. And this is a very popular tourist resort for the Japanese. They have two Jetfoils and are just about to acquire their third. There's another service in a rough stretch of water across the Irish Sea. An Irish state-owned company operates traditional ferry boats between Dublin and Liverpool and a Jetfoil in the same route. And that boat has had to operate in some very rough water conditions and has done so quite successfully. And another operation, they have two Jetfoils operating now in the Canary Islands. It's a Spanish state-owned company running ferry boats and Jetfoils, and they're considering expanding their service. Again, the feature of all of these services, the boat takes off from right downtown and goes right to where the people want to go. There is no hassle service, no waiting at airports. And the new service is just starting this next month. Two Jetfoils will operate across the English Channel from Dover to Ostend. And this now is a service that is not a city center service as such, but it's a service that links, in fact it's run by one of the C-Link partners, that links the trains from the continent to the trains in England, so it's a link in a transportation system and provides a high-speed crossing, again, across a very rough body of water. In addition, we have Jetfoil operating in Argentina, and we have Jetfoil services that we plan to have start again in Hawaiian Islands before too long, and in other parts of the world. So that's really what the status of the program is right now. And we have a brief film that's part of our little carpet bagging show here that will, I think, demonstrate what the Jetfoil is about more than we can in just words. Paul, you try to play the machine there.
Okay. Actually, I got two film clips. The first one is a sound, so it's pretty self-explanatory, and then I'll give you a few comments on the second piece. The second piece is sound, but it has some rough water operation in Jetfoil, which I think is pretty significant. So.
When seas get rough, 15-foot swells, 4-foot chop on top, ships and the people in them take a beat. The traditional answer to this problem: slow down and wallow through. Now there is a new and completely different answer for rough water travel. It's called Jetfoil. Jetfoil operates from a different set of principles. It is different from a displacement helmet. It is different from an air cushion effect vest. It is different from conventional hydrofoil. This difference in a Boeing jet foil makes it possible to operate in speeds like these at over 40 knots without adversely affecting passenger comfort or safety. Equally important, commuter type schedules can be established and maintained. Operational stability is the result of a marriage of marine and aeronautical theory and design. Unlike any other ship, the jet foil does not follow the surface of the water. It literally flies through the water, unaffected by the heaving motion of waves or swell. Previous conventional hydrofoils used surface-piercing foils, which worked well in smooth water. However, in rough water, surface-piercing foils react to the increasing and decreasing depth of the wave by producing increasing and decreasing amounts of lift, resulting in the hard ride characteristic to conventional hydrofoils, even in moderate speeds. Jet foil is different. Looking down on the foil in operation shows the difference. The foil is fully submerged, unaffected by the height of the wave. It looks and operates like the wing of an airplane, with any flap action necessary for a stable ride made automatically. The ship's attitudes and height are electronically measured. Computer evaluates this information. And automatically initiates any flap action necessary to maintain level flight. Jet foil is propelled by the water it rides over. Two gas turbine engines coupled with water jet pumps take in water through the aft center strut, then discharge it 110 tons a minute through nozzles on the stern. This water jet operation leaves very little waste, causes little shore disturbance. This use of smoother water below the surface for both lift and propulsion reduces drag and the effects of current and tide, factors that can affect ship efficiency. Jet foil's propulsion and control reflect the influence of aeronautical theory and design, and so does the hull. Lightweight aluminum frames provide a solid base for the all-welded aluminum polish. The result is a hull that is vibration-free and easy to maintain. Struts and foils are made of stainless steel. They are virtually invulnerable to debris encountered in flight. During shallow water operations, these massive struts are rotated out of the water. Hull-borne, draft is reduced to 54 inches, or 1.37 meters. Maintenance is simplified. But the true beauty of jet foil, the real difference is apparent in flight. There's never been another ship quite like it. Control is everything, automatic. Stability is sure, unchanging. Speed is constant, reliable. Once the hull lifts free of the water's surface, it is uncoupled from the restraints that have been imposed upon conventional ships until Jeff Boyle.
We find it difficult to plan our professional photographers at the same time that nature plans the storms and get the proper lighting conditions. This was taken by our Japanese operator, in fact, it was taken by the general manager. He's been so impressed with the operation of the jet boat. And what you'll see here are some pictures of the jet boat taken from their own ferries. They run the ferries about the same size as we do out here. As Bob mentioned, they run from Niigata on the main island of Honshu, 34 miles out to the island of Saga. They received their first jet boil in 1977, and 2 years later they also got their second jet boil. They have a four-man crew, two in the wheelhouse and two in the cabin, and they carry 280 passengers. This is one of their ferry boats here. They're just leaving the Shimano River from the harbor around Niigata, going north towards the island of Saga. As you see here, the wind is picked up as we left the protection of the landmasses, and we're getting some spray carried off the waves, which, according to my nautical friend, is the gale force wind about 30 knots. As they continue on out here, they get into what we call sea state 4, high sea state 4, about 7 foot waves. This has been a very successful service. Last year they had an average load factor of 52%. 52% of the seats were full year round. Their mechanical reliability has been 99%. They've done an excellent job maintaining the weather reliability last year was about 95%. And here's the picture taken from their ferry boat on the jet boat. Jet boat makes several passes here. I think it's on the second one that hits a large cavity or a large hole in the water, and the forward foil comes unwetted. We call that roaching. The loose lip drops down, and then it continues on. It makes quite a splash. It makes several passes here, so we'll just watch this for a minute. Showed this to the ferry system. I showed it to Jim Heidi and some of the other members of the ferry system. And yeah, that looks a lot like the water out here. That's the reason I brought it along. We have some sea state data of the area around here. The U.S. Navy collects sea state data both the period and the wave height. But unfortunately, it's not very well localized. Not only the inland water areas, but also off the coast, so I'm not sure how accurate it is. I think it's quite conservative because off the coast, obviously the seas are much rougher than what you'd expect inland water inland waterways. From this, we've estimated in the summertime you'd have about a 96% weather level. In the wintertime, it dropped down to about 92%. The rest of this is rather repetitious. Without belaboring the point, I think I'll go on to the rest of the presentation. What I'd like to discuss now is what we propose for the trial service in Southeast Alaska. And the proposal we have here today is for standard jet boil, the type you see here in the background, and this is to be delivered to you next May for an operation. The What you see in the foreground is a fishery patrol boat. We have sold this to the British Royal Navy. This was commissioned in June of 1960, and they've been very satisfied with the seakeeping capabilities. Recently, they reported that they were running in force 10 gales, which is a 50 knot wind, and up to wave heights of 12 feet. It also holds a record for the longest foil-borne operation of 9.5 hours. This is in 15 to 30 knot winds and seas of 2 to 10 feet off the coast of Scotland. As I say, this is the jet boat that we proposed for the trial demonstration. We carry about 260 passengers and seated on both decks. We don't believe this is necessarily the boat that you'd want in the long term. This is our standard boat that we've been willing to provide for this trial service, and if you want to modify the thing afterwards to be able to carry cargo or make some other changes to it, then we'd be most happy to work the problem, or for that matter, you can take it to a shipyard and have it changed. All aluminum structure. As Bob said, we propose a downtown-to-downtown service, and I must emphasize, we don't believe this boat would replace your ferry boats, but I think it really complements them. No doubt that there's a lot of auto traffic, and there's a lot of requirement for freight and large trailers. And I think with this type of a service, in addition to your current ferry service, you can get better utilization out of your current ferry boats. For the trial service, we propose stationing the boat in Juneau, basing the boat in Juneau, and each day we would either run up to Skagway, out to Sitka, and on down to Ketchikan. This is the type of schedule you can maintain during the day or during the week. I don't believe I'm an expert. I have picked up some statistics on the traffic up here and spent a few trips coming up here. And from my personal perspective, this is the type of schedule I would propose for it. Of course, obviously, it could be changed for the state if so wishes. I propose on Sunday doing 2 round trips from Juneau, Haines, Skagway, and return. 2 of these round trips. Do it on Sunday and Thursday during the summer from starting the service in June through September. Monday doing a 1 round trip, Tuesday running from Juneau down to Ketchikan, overnighting the crew in Ketchikan, and returning to Juneau the following day, and do the same thing on Friday and Saturday. In the winter months when the traffic drops off significantly, I would drop the service up to Skagway and still do, on Thursday, still do 2 round trips to Haines and Skagway. You could separate this and do 1 round trip each day, but I don't think the traffic justifies continuing the type of service that I have here. All this data is in the book that I will pass out to you. I just want to briefly go over the type of schedule that you could have. Leaving Juneau at 7:30 in the morning, you're out to Skagway at 11 o'clock, back to Juneau at 2:55, finishing up about 11 o'clock at night. On Monday, you could leave in Juneau at 8 o'clock, go out to Sitka, an hour turnaround there, and be back at 5 o'clock. So it provides a regular daytime service, typical to what the airlines also provide. On Tuesdays and Fridays, you go 8 o'clock in Juneau, arrive at stops at Petersburg and Wrangell, arrive at Ketchikan at 3:20, and return the following day.
Okay, one point I might make, Paul, is that what Paul has thought up here in the way of a demonstration is something that gives the boat maximum exposure to the citizens of Alaska. It may be that in a permanent service, you'd want to serve other communities, smaller communities, perhaps. We realize that these communities already have pretty good air and ferry service.
Yeah, I would just like you had the picture up there. What saved your life preserving defense? Yeah, right. I see you've got a lot of passengers.
Yeah, we have inflatable life rafts on each side. inflatable life rafts in these containers that automatically place when they're dropped into the water. And in each seat there is a preserver, a life preserver, built into the cushion.
I noticed, sir, that you proposed a demonstration there for Southeast, and of course most of that's all inland waters.
Yes, that's right.
And my concern would be, I'd like to see some sort of a demonstration there that would link, Valdez, Seward, Kodiak, and even travel further out westward, which is an area that's really not being serviced now.
I appreciate that. Senator Ray has also mentioned the same thing to me. And the previous study I did 2 years ago, before I did this one, I did look at that area, look at the Southwest system. And I think for your first application, this would be the obvious place to start, with the communities, the size the communities have here, and then go on up to Prince William Sound, out to Kodiak, out to the Aleutian Chain. I think for a trial initially, I think this is the place to start. But I think the long term, you're right. There's a market in all southern Alaska waters on the Aleutian Chain.
Representative Lincoln?
Well, just I was going to pose the same question, actually. Politically speaking, your advantage to get it into both ends of the state, because this end of the state will see it, the other end of the state won't if you don't do it that way.
Well, in the near term, there is more water traffic in this area.
I realize that, but still, again,
right. But I agree. In the long
numbers.
Term, yes. And in my booklet, which I'll pass on to you, I address that. So there's a real market too. But I'm just trying to concentrate on the service trials, which I think most of the waterborne traffic.
Now, how would they work in Cook Inlet?
Fine when there isn't any ice.
Yeah, I
7 months of the year.
Plenty deep enough to be safe enough.
Absolutely. In this trial service I proposed for starting next year, I looked at the fares of the other modes of transportation. I looked at it in terms of cents per passenger mile versus the distance it's here are the various routes. Airfares run about 45 to 55 cents per passenger mile, looking at the waterborne distance. The ferry fares run about 12 cents to about 20 cents, the lower circles here are the basic ferry fare. The upper circle is half of the cabin rate. What I propose for a jet fuel fare would be about 32 cents a mile along this line here. I also looked at just using the basic ferry fare rates. I'll show you the impact if you use just the basic ferry fare rates. I believe that this fare about 30 cents a mile is a competitive fare. Look at what the passenger pays for a trip cost versus the time. The jet fuel fits right in here. Here's the Juneau Skagway trip. You pay about $35. This is 1981, today's dollars. The ferry fare with the transportation, whether it takes a bus or half a taxi, in this case out to Off Bay, is about $32. The airfare is around $60. So I believe this provides a competitive fare. Same way down from Juneau out to Sitka, the jet fuel would be $49, airfare is about $60, and depending on where you take half a cabin, the range is between about $35 to $48. And you go through the same type of rationale for the other routes, and they all provide a similar type of choice in rate and cost versus time. Again, this is in the book, and the background is so you can, at your leisure, go through this in the study. Looking at the type of traffic we have up here during that time period, based on what the ferries ran in 1979, and also the data I had available on the airlines, looks like in 1982, I project about 155,000 four of these routes where the jet fuel will be operating. And during the June to November period, about 70% of the people travel, which is about 109,000 passengers. And then to determine what the jet quality carry, I look at, again, look at each one of those, and pick out a share for the jet foil. Percent of the existing market. For the Juno Sitka, for its 6 months trial, I thought we'd pick up about 30% of the service, or 30% of the traffic because of the much quicker trip time by JetBlue compared to the ferry, although we're only running one trip a week, one round trip a week. For the Juno Haynes, because of the large auto market of people going on up the highway, we pick 20% of that market. Skagway, it's a much more frequent service, few autos, pick 70% of the market, and so on down the list. Then in addition, I believe there's, you might call it novelty. It's a different service, a newer service. I think there's additional inducement that you could apply to this. And these are the factors that I used. I came up with about 58,000 passengers that I project during the 6 months of service.
Inducement factor. That's the novelty factor. I mean, people.
Yes, that's what I
is that a percentage?
That's a percentage, right.
I think it'd be higher than that probably out here. I think a lot of people write it when they see it.
Well, as I say, this is just my personal judgment as I see it and from what's happened around the roots and I'm trying to put a little perspective on it. I think it's there and just how much I guess it's some of you there.
Yeah.
I appreciate your comment. As you mentioned, we're talking about a 260 passenger boat. This is the load factor you get on the various legs. The lowest would be between Haynes and Skagway, about 44%. The highest would be on the Petersburg Juno route, about 80%. I gave an overall load factor of 60% during the 6 month service. The revenue, the result from that traffic and the fares. The fare that I proposed for the jet foil would be about $2.3 million. These are the actual fares for the jet foil, and for 1982, I inflated them 10% based on what's happened on the both the airlines and the ferry boats has run between 12 and 20%. And then the yields, accounting for travel agent fees and the special discounts for senior citizens and youth, I came up with this yield, the traffic, as I showed you, is $2.3 million. What would the operating cost be for the boat? I've gone through in detail the running costs, as I call them. For the crew, we propose two separate crews, each be a 7-man crew, 3 in the wheelhouse and 4 in the cabin. We'd use the Boeing captains to assure reliability and the operation, assure that the thing is properly run for the 6 month trial. I also included allowance in here for Boeing support and maintenance. Being this is a 6 month trial, we suggested that we have some Boeing support there as well as some last minute labor. This can be negotiated as the state wishes. This is what I suggest for the service. Fuel currently it costs $1.05 according to the ferry system at Skagway. And I've costed out at $1.21, maintenance material at $140. Startup costs, these are the costs that we incurred to prepare each of the sites and get the whole organization started, including management labor or reservation system, which could be a tie-on to the current reservation system that's in the ferry system and advertising and the shipping costs and the route proofing, which is about $430,000. The running costs is $2.4 million.
Choose that down to an hourly cost or something? Operating cost?
I have it down in terms of cents per passenger mile, which I'll show you in a minute.
You have a total hourly cost of the operation on the run?
Yes.
Within a ballpark what it is for Alaska, you have it?
Let me show you the chart I have on this. administrative and shore side, we propose a separate administration of this service. Since you're trying to determine what the costs are, what the problems are, we wouldn't propose at this point integrating into the current ferry system, but have a separate staff board, like a manager, a marketing manager, an accountant, and ticketing here in Juneau. This would be about $200,000 for a 6-month service. And here's some of the other costs. I won't go through these in detail, but it comes to about $500,000 for a 6-month service. What are the cash flows for the 6 months? As I mentioned, they have revenue of $2.3 million, the running cost of $2.4 million. This would be a net shortfall of $156,000. And I'll come back to this in the next chart. I'll discuss this a little further. Including the indirect costs I showed you, the startup costs, with the proposed fares, as I mentioned, 30 cents a mile, you have a $1 million shortfall for the 6 months. If you went to the standard ferry fares, the ferry system now charges for the basic rate, would be $2.1 million for a shortfall. Or in the very worst case, if you didn't charge anything, you'd have a $3.3 million would be the maximum expenditure if you didn't charge anything for the service. Going back to the relationship between the running costs and the revenue, I've included here 1980 actual cost for all the ferry systems that are talking about Manaspina, Chilkoot, the Columbia, Mokani, and Aurora here. The monthly operate, their running costs, and the revenues that result from them. Looking at the relationship of the revenues to the running costs, on the average, they cover about 62% of the running costs. In other words, it's being subsidized about 48% of the running costs. This is excluding administrative costs. For the jet fuel trial, for the 6-month jet fuel trial, you'd be covering 94% of the running costs with the fares that I proposed, so you'd have a 6% subsidy. The reason I didn't include the administrative costs and the startup costs is I was trying to show the relationship of how the jet fuel relates. If it's a permanent service. Even then, you have the Boeing labor here in the cost incurred by having Boeing people on
it. Yes, sir. Chairman, you run these figures by DOT?
Yes, I have. I talked to Commissioner Ward yesterday.
Do they concur with this?
They haven't had a chance to study it because I just came up on Tuesday night. I gave the Commissioner Ward tomorrow. Yesterday and tomorrow I plan to give it to Jim Ivey. I went through the same type of costs. I got these costs from them. These are right out of their data. And tomorrow I plan to stop by Jim Ivey's office and provide them a copy of the book too, so they have a chance to look at it. About the hourly cost. I don't have the hourly cost, but I have the cost here in terms of cents per passenger mile. I have the hours, but I don't have it right in my head at the moment. I'm sorry to ask you a question. But what I'm trying to show here is the cost, and again, in terms of cents per passenger mile versus number of passengers that carry. The JetFuel for a 6-month trial is a line like this. The Lakani, which carries about the same number of passengers, or has the same capacity, is a line like this, which is about 10% higher than the JetFuel at any passenger count. For the JetFuel and permit service, when you take the Boeing people out of there, it would be about 30% below the Lakani at the same passenger count. The Malaspina line is over here. These blips I have on here is the average passenger capacity. The JetFuel with 155 passengers, 6% load factor, the county. Looking at the data, the time before I did this and this last time, usually your ferry boats run around 30% passenger load factor. What you're really doing is carrying automobiles around. They run the automobile load factor or your vehicle load factor is around 50%. And this is not unusual. This is typical worldwide. English Channel is around 30%. British Columbia is around 30%. In fact, in Washington State, around 15% is the average passenger. Because of the size of the boats, you usually don't get a very high boat factor of passengers. Again, you turn them out of it. Another comparison I made is fuel efficiency, which is quite critical to any operating body. For the jet fuel operation, we expect to use about 665,000 gallons. Looking at the Lakani and the other ferries in 1980, this is very similar to the Lakani, 770,000, a little bit less. Gallons per hour, the average used to be 485 gallons per hour, which is above your average Connie and the other two here, except for the Columbia, which is 729. Again, this data is directly from the ferry system. Gallons, another way of comparing it, gallons per nautical mile, the jet fuel is about 20% higher than the Lakani, so 10.1 versus 12.8. And if you include the average load that's on each of these boats, the jet fuel is 0.082 gallons per passenger. Smaller the number, the more efficient it is. And surprisingly, the Columbia comes in second highest because of the size of its load, 0.103. As I mentioned, for this trial service, we have a proposal for a conditional purchase. During the contracting period, we would propose that the state and Boeing set up a mutually agreed upon operating reliability criteria that has to be met during this time. But we would expect the state to pay for the boat by the time the service starts in June of 1982. And at the end of that period, at the end of the operating period, the service trials at the end of the 6 months. If the boat did not meet the operating reliability criteria, we'd take the boat back with a refund of the purchase price, which also includes the letter of intent. So looking at the funds that are required of the state in each of your fiscal years, July through June 1981, if the state decides to go ahead with appropriation during this legislative session, it would require $50,000. Like I say, that would be refunded at the end of the trials if they were not successful. In 1982, it requires $17 million, $16 million for the purchase, which again is refundable, the startup costs, and 1 month of operating costs. And I was a little conservative here to make sure that we had enough funds for that first month in case things did not start off as fast as you'd expect. In 1983, for the last 5 months of the operating the operation trials, another $1.3 million.
Representative Metcalf.
Concern that brings to mind is your proposal is for the fair weather months of the year.
That's right.
And the other 6 months of the year, there's a lot of difference out there.
Yeah. The reason I did, you might say a flaw, one of the reasons the traffic, the boats available in June. Trying to minimize the impact of the state because your traffic is way much less in the wintertime. And I think we still get some during the last 2 months in October, November. I think that you probably still get some heavy weather operation.
Well, I think that's where we test it also. November and December, the seas are substantially different than they are in the summertime.
At this point, this is a proposal that our company is willing to go with. If you feel like there's something else, this is a mess of the horse to start with. And we'd be willing to listen to any other proposal that you have.
We would be foolish to enter into a purchase agreement without finding that it was usable in the other months of the year, because we might find ourselves with something that we had to part with 6 months out of the year.
I did briefly look at what the costs were for running another 6 months. It looks like it's something over $2 million. This is the running cost. Because, like I said, 70% of the traffic during this time period. I hate to see the boats running on. well as the boat being available next year.
Well, it should at least be tested during one of those.
I can say this is the horse that we put together. This is not our final offer. It's what we were asked to go with at this point.
The second question, you proposed just attempting this operation in Southeast.
Initially, yes.
And do you only have one boat available? Or would you have two boats available?
We only have one boat coming out of production.
We have this boat under contract to a company that operated Madeira, but their financing is slow coming together, so we're frankly left with the boat here that is available at an early delivery period. And there is just the one boat available. Although I don't see why we couldn't consider a flip test period. It might be a little more expensive, but there could be a flip test period in this area and some other area if we give quite a visibility to the service. Well, just as the sales, from your, even from your own point of view, and interest, I would think that would be a poor business decision on your part not to expose it to a wider issue.
One of the people from our group has been talking to the fishery patrol people about using it as, like the British Royal Navy, as a fishery patrol vessel. And it's possible that sometime during this period or the end of the period that maybe wanting to take it out and run it offshore here, which should give it a pretty good exposure to its rough water condition. But some proposal like that must be like you have to put it.
Well, I was also talking about a broader spectrum of the last population.
Sure.
Well, I appreciate that.
Okay. Summary, we believe that the GEMCO does have an application in the area. The work, this proposal we have here is gone further than we have with any other proposal we've made to the company, because we believe it's something that can work in this area. I'd entertain any further questions that you might have at this time for Bob and I to answer.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Chairman,
what is going to be your proposal committee action?
At the present time, I didn't plan on taking any action on it until you had an opportunity to go through and study the packets that you will be given at the end of the demonstration.
Well, I guess, are we going to propose some legislation to fund?
I think very possibly, Representative Metcalf, that this would be something that we would decide after we had gone thoroughly through the package. I think at this time, it would be a little bit premature to set up any type of decision until after you had an opportunity to go completely through the package and see what it's all about.
Madam Chairman, I might add, this afternoon we will also present the same thing to Senator Ray's Senate Transportation. We might want to provide some joint.
Representative Sheriff.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chairman. Just a couple of quick questions, maybe in regards to operations. On the operation during winter months, we have a situation here that involves icing to a certain degree on these vessels. And we've seen vessels come into Kodiak there with several inches of ice, you know, particularly right in the bow area. And during your presentation, the part of the computer system there that judges the depth of the wave and moves the airfoils up and down, or whatever technical terms you're using there. What effect does icing have on this type of system?
About a year ago, I had one of our captains up here, Boeing captain, who's a very good engineer, and we rode around on the ferry system. Looked at the problems that may occur in the your concern as well, whether we really understood what the problems were, a bit about the breed and so forth. And that's one of, also one of the things that we have a cold weather kit that takes care of some of this. I'm not sure if we can handle it all, but you talk about ferry boats, or not ferry boats, but the fishing boats coming in. They're out there for a long time. So, you know, all our runs are, you run out to sit there for 4 hours. It's a pretty short time. I don't believe you get the ice fall. I guess in Lynn Canal, if you're probably get an ice fall. There you run for 2.5 hours. From what your data is available, you don't believe it's a problem.
Well, I would probably suspect there that chill factor plays an important role, unless you know the higher the velocity of the wind there, the greater the chill factor. And of course, we're talking about a vessel here now that's going 40 knots, which is basically going four times faster than any other vessels. And then if the temperature is down and the water spray is up, then you have that chill factor that's also involved there.
I guess I can't answer the question fully, but we do have this cold weather kit which takes care of the intakes, heats the intakes, heats the height sensor, and as far as the strut itself, I don't believe that's a problem because of the water bypass in there, the salt water spray. I don't think it's going to build up there. The rest of the superstructure, I don't know.
Madam Chairman, I have one more question, I guess. In Alaska, we have quite a bit of deadheads, nautically speaking, not legislatively. But are obstructions in the water?
Yes. That's a very common question. I have a book along just to answer that question. The JetFlow has been designed. We have some down in Puget Sound, too, and we obstruct some of these. This is not the largest of them, but it's a 13-inch log, which we cut right through. If you get a very large piece of debris in the water, we have a mechanism built into the fore and aft strut that allows it to fold back. It's too large for the strut to pass through. The boat would then land, have to come back into the harbor hull block, and then replace actually a shear link in the aft strut as a shock absorber with the forward strut. These things have to be replaced. In fact, during our demonstrations last summer in Puget Sound, we operated the shock absorber and we overnight replaced it and went on the next day.
How long does it take this vessel to get up on this plane, on this step?
The normal takeoff is about 2 minutes. Of course, at zero, and you get up to about 27 knots, and you're out of the water. It's a very gradual thing. It isn't like an airplane where you go down the runway, rotate, take off. It's just a slow climb on. You don't really know what happens. It's up to normally 2 minutes or less.
I take it the seats are much more comfortable than those in the ferries.
The typical airline type of seats, not on tracks. The stopping distances are about 1,000 feet. Pull back in the throttles and the boat tries to stop at 1,000 feet. And if there's an emergency, or the sailboat in the way, or other boats in the way, you can stop at something less than 500 feet. And in this case, pull back the throttles, put them into reverse thrust, and also set the depth indicator for max depth. So we dive to the water. It goes up a big splash.
What's that do with the passengers in there?
Less force in the passenger than a normal reverses on a jet airplane. It's really a very smooth acceleration.
Yeah.
Glasses would come off the table if the people were not at all. Well, if there are no more questions, thank you very much for your time. I appreciate having the opportunity here. If there are questions after you do the information we leave behind, please respond to any questions that you might have. If there are some modifications to our proposal or further discussions, they're available anytime.
We appreciate the opportunity to have this demonstration. As Paul can tell you, we've been several months putting it together.
Thanks for your time here in Redding. Always enjoy coming up here and studying the area a little bit more. Enjoy the work.
Is there any further business coming for this committee? If not, then we'll consider the committee.